been continuing his discussion of the material and spiritual worlds. And yesterday we heard how this material world is actually like a reflection of the spiritual world. It is only a shadow of reality. In the shadow there is no reality or substance, Srila Prabhupada says. But from the shadow we can understand that reality and substance do exist, but elsewhere. He gives the example of the mirage that we see in the desert. Many times, travelers in the desert, when they haven't seen water for a long time, imagine that they see water at a distance. Actually, water does not exist there, but it exists somewhere else. In the same way, there is no substance and reality to this material world in the sense that the relationships and names and forms of this world are of no value in and of themselves. But it does mean that there are things of substance and reality in the spiritual world. The names and forms over there are real. Then Srila Prabhupada will now, in the next paragraph, that is on page 23, continue to discuss the nature of the spiritual world and how to get there. So let us read. The Lord suggests that we attain the spiritual world in the following manner, as stated in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 15. Text 5. We can all chant together.
Nirmana moha jita sanga dosha adhyatma nitya vinivritta kamah dvandvair vimukta sukha dukha samye gachantya mudha padam avyayantat.
That padam avyayam, or eternal kingdom, can be reached by one who is nirmana moha. What does this mean? We are after designations. Someone wants to become sir, someone wants to become lord, someone wants to become the president or a rich man or a king or something else. As long as we are attached to these designations, we are attached to the body, because designations belong to the body. But we are not these bodies, and realizing this is the first stage in spiritual realization. We are associated with the three modes of material nature, but we must become detached through devotional service to the Lord. If we are not attached to devotional service to the Lord, then we cannot become detached from the modes of material nature. Designations and attachments are due to our lust and desire, our wanting to lord it over material nature. As long as we do not give up this propensity of lording it over material nature, there is no possibility of returning to the kingdom of the Supreme, the Sanatana Dham. That eternal kingdom which is never destroyed can be approached by one who is not bewildered by the attractions of false material enjoyments, who is situated in the service of the Supreme Lord. One so situated can easily approach the Supreme Abode. Unquote. So in this verse, in the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna is describing what is required to reach that spiritual kingdom, which is the world of reality. It is called Padam Avyayam, that destination which is imperishable, Avyaya, which exists eternally. And the very first thing Krishna says here is that one must become Nirmana. Nirmana Moha means Nirmana and Nirmoha. Nir means without. Just like Nirvishesh, in Prabhupada's Pranati we have the word Nirvishesh Shunyavadi. Vishesh means with qualities. Nirvishesh means without any attributes. So like that, Nirmoha and Nirmana means without man, without moha. Man means here false pride. And moha means illusion. So one must become freed from this false pride. False pride is connected to illusion. How? Here Krishna is saying Nirman Moha. So man and moha is actually connected. Why is pride connected to illusion? Yes. Well, okay, but something more. Why is pride connected to illusion? Yes.
Because of the bodily platform, both are related with body.
Well, all right, in more practical terms, everyday terms. Actually, let us reflect on this for a moment. What are we in this world? Just imagine this vast creation. How many universes are there? Right? Billions and trillions of universes. This whole material creation is just one tiny fraction of the entire spiritual creation. So how much more is there in existing the spiritual creation? The spiritual creation consists of eternally perfect souls serving perfectly in a perfect atmosphere, without faults, fully empowered by the Lord. And in the material creation we have faulty beings. But even in the material creation, how many universes are there? Unlimited. And in each universe, how many planets? And in each planet, how many living entities? Each one trying to think, I am the Lord and the Master. Prabhupada spoke like this similarly one time. I think it was in Los Angeles. He was addressing one particular devotee. And he said, there are billions. He gave a similar kind of analysis. There is spiritual world is so big, there are so many universes, and each universe is so big, within each universe so many planets, on this so many planets, one earthly planetary system, in that there is one tiny earth planet, in that there is one country, in the one country there is one city, in one city there is one street, in one street there is one house, in one house there are so many people, but still one amongst them is thinking, I am a great man. I am so big. I am so powerful. So in this way, even if we reflect on the enormity, the vastness of this creation and what we are in this world, utterly insignificant, utterly powerless. If today there is an earthquake, there is a big storm, there is a tsunami, a flood, a famine, what can we do? Nothing. Even all of us put together, the most powerful people put together can do nothing. Tomorrow, if a shooting star or a meteor falls and creates and destroys a big city, nothing can be done. With all our science and technology, we send spacecraft up and sometimes they burst into flames and kill all the astronauts inside. In the face of this material nature, whose power is awesome, very, very great, what are we? So what kind of great illusion it is by which we think we are something? Amongst all the innumerable powers that are displayed by the Lord in this creation, somehow we tend to overlook everything and we think that I am something special, I am great, I am this, I am that. Forgetting Yet ultimately, we are not the doers. Prakrite kriyamanani gune karmani sarvashah. Ahankara vimudhatma kartaham iti manyate. Anyone who thinks that I am the doer is in illusion. It is being done by the three modes of material nature. Furthermore, because of the bodily designation, as some devotees have already answered, we also go further and further into illusion. When we understand that we are the spirit soul, then we understand who we are. Prabhupada one time told a devotee, "Do you know who you are? You are simply 1/10,000th of the upper tip of a hair. That's what you are. And you think you are very great? Why does he say you are 1/10,000th of the tip of a hair? That's the size of the soul. That's what we are. Take one hair, divide it into 1,000 parts. Take one of those parts, divide it into another 1,000 parts. And one of those parts is the size of the hair, of the soul. So that's what we are. And still we think I am something. That is Maya. Maya makes us imagine unbelievable things, incredible things. And we sometimes when you, like in a dream, you cannot imagine what kind of things you dream about. All kinds of strange and funny things. And when you wake up from the dream, then you laugh it off. And so it was just a dream. How could I ever dream that I was a king? I am not a king, I am far away from a king. So like that, this stage of Maya is like the stage of dreaming. And when we wake up from this dream of Maya into self-realization, then we come to the point of understanding, oh my God, all these illusions, how did I ever imagine that I was this and this and this? But I am none of these things. I am simply eternal soul, I am part and parcel of Krishna. That's all I am. But I was thinking I am such and such and so So therefore, because of illusion, naturally there is pride. Because we forget the reality. In ignorance, there is always pride. Just as a firefly becomes very proud of its illumination at night, forgetting that there is a sun, in front of whom its illumination is going to be nothing, insignificant. So therefore, Krishna is saying, Nirmana Moha. One should be without pride, without illusion. So Prabhupada is saying here, everyone is after designations in this world. Everyone wants to be something. And even in spiritual life, sometimes, this pursuit of designations may not leave us. At a subtle level it may haunt us. We want to be this and bigger and bigger and bigger. But there is no need to become bigger and bigger and bigger. There is only need to become smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller. That is a spiritual formula. One who can succeed in becoming smaller and smaller and smaller, in the sense of being servant of the devotees, considering oneself to be insignificant, that person is truly eligible to return to the kingdom of God. No one else. Pride comes in with everything. Queen Kunti also declares a similar thing in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Janmaishwarya Shruta Shribhir Edhamanam Madhapuman Naivahatya Vidhatum Vai Tvamakinchana Gochara. She says, my dear Krishna, one who is unfortunate enough to have four kinds of opulences cannot attain you and call out your name with feeling. So what are the four unfortunate categories that Kunti Maharani is speaking about? Number one, one who has janma, high birth. Number two, Aishwarya, one who has a great amount of wealth. Shruti, one who has great learning, who is very educated, intelligent. Shri Bhir, one who is very beautiful. Those who are unfortunate enough to fall into any of these four categories, for them it is very hard to feelingly call out the name of Krishna. The rich man is thinking, I've got my money, why do I need Krishna? So his calling out for Krishna is not helpless. Someone who's got too much beauty and too much intelligence thinks, well, my beauty, my intelligence will take care of me. It's making me so popular and so powerful. So one cannot feelingly call out for the Lord when one is burdened with these so-called opulences. In fact, these opulences then only serve to keep us deeper in the cycle of birth and death, inasmuch as a golden crown which is very heavy on the head of a man who is drowning in an ocean only makes him drown faster. So that is the purpose that these so-called opulences serve in this world. So one doesn't have to worry about trying to obtain all these things, because they make one intoxicated. Edhamana madaha puman. Mada means intoxication. So beauty, learning, wealth, etc. are like intoxicants. There are many, many rich businessmen who have enough money to feed comfortably, lavishly, many, many generations of their descendants. But they still want more, more, more. Why? It's an intoxication. They can't give it up. They're addicted to making money. So they want more and more and more. And they get some kind of great thrill out of it. Then they want to be number one in this and number one in that. Want bigger and bigger and bigger. And then they die. And everything is finished. So the illusion of this world is very powerful. It makes everyone hanker after designations. It makes people intoxicated. So therefore pride is called mada, madness. So the word man means pride, but elsewhere in the scriptures the word pride is called mada, which actually literally means intoxication. Because a proud person is actually intoxicated, completely out of touch with reality. Just like a man who is drunk on alcohol will come and say, I am a king. He will declare to everybody. But because he is intoxicated, he speaks like that, he thinks like that. Similarly, a person who is intoxicated with so many things in this world, the possessions, the wealth and so on, also speaks like a madman. And that's also illusion. The state of intoxication is a state of illusion. So unless one gives up this hankering for designations, as Prabhupada is explaining here, we cannot attain freedom from the bodily designation. Because designations are like labels to the body. So this is very hard to give up. And Prabhupada is saying here, he is giving us here the process of how we can be detached from these designations which are born out of the three modes of material nature. We can only be detached from something if we are attached to something else. Why? Yes. Okay. It is the nature of the soul to be attached to something. Correct. So if the soul is not attached to Krishna, the soul is attached to Maya. So if we want to become detached from Maya, then we have to become attached to Krishna. So the process of bhakti is a process of attaching oneself to Krishna, and then automatically one becomes detached from the three modes of material nature. This is the beauty of Krishna consciousness. Renunciation is a byproduct of bhakti. Bhakti is not dependent on renunciation. Vasudeve Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojitaha Janayatyashu Vairagyam Jnanam Chayat Ahaitukam. For one who is practicing Krishna consciousness, there is automatically knowledge, renunciation, and everything else. So the process of becoming free from this world is to become detached from this world, then only can we go there. Similarly, the process of becoming free from this material world is to become attached to that world. And then slowly, step by step, to the extent that our attachment for Krishna increases, to that extent automatically everything will happen. Therefore, in the Srimad Bhagavatam it is said, Bhaktihi Pareshanu Bhavo Virakti Anyatra Chaishatrika Eka Kalaha Prapadyamanasya Yathashvitaha Syu Tushti Pushti Kshudapayo Nughasam. The nine Yogendras, they tell Maharaj Nimi that by surrendering to the Supreme Lord, Prapadyamanasya, completely surrendering to the Lord and serving Him in all earnestness, one develops simultaneously trika eka kalaha. At one time these three things happen together. Bhakti, that is devotion for the Lord. Para isha anubhavaha, one experiences the Lord. Viraktir anyatra, one develops renunciation from things that are not connected to Krishna, anything material. So renunciation is automatically there for a devotee. Freedom from the modes automatically comes for someone who is serving Krishna. And the example is given here of a person who is eating a meal. With every morsel that the person takes, simultaneously three things happen. Tushti. One feels very satisfied, because the food is tasty, delicious. Second, pushti, because one is very hungry, one may be feeling weak. But when one starts eating, then gradually the nourishment and strength comes back to the body. Kshut apayaha, one is hungry before one eats. But as one continues to eat, then the hunger is also appeased. In the same way, devotion, experience to the Lord, renunciation from the world all come automatically for one who has surrendered to Krishna. So the important thing here, as Prabhupada says, is that we have to attach ourselves to something higher, and that is the devotional service to the Lord. And so long as we have this propensity of lording it over the material nature, then we cannot leave. So long as there is something here which we feel is valuable, we cannot leave. Then Krishna will say, well, you want that, you think it's valuable, so stay here and try to enjoy it. So we have to want Krishna much more than anything of this world. There is a well-known story about this saint from Maharashtra called Tukaram. When the time came for him to go back to the spiritual world, the Vimana, the Vaikuntha Vimana came, and as he got ready to board the aircraft, the spacecraft, he went to his wife, who was not really a devotee, and he said, you also come with me, we'll go back to the Vaikuntha. And she didn't have faith in these things, and she replied, well, I don't have time, I have to look after my buffaloes. And so she remained behind looking after her buffaloes. And Tukaram went ahead in that transcendental spacecraft and returned to Vaikuntha. So Tukaram's wife considered the buffaloes more valuable than Vaikuntha. So like that, in this world everyone considers something to be more valuable than Krishna. So till such time as that mood exists, one cannot be free. One has to want to go there more than anything else. So long as there is something that we think is valuable and worth attaining in this world, till that time we cannot go back. So therefore one has to also become free from bewilderment, from the false enjoyment of this world. Therefore in this verse there is amudhaha, unbewildered by the pleasures of this world. Vinivritta kamaha, free from all desires for sense gratification. adhyatma nitya. One has to be situated in eternal knowledge. One should understand something about real knowledge and the eternal spiritual world. Dvandvair vimukta, become free from the dualities of this world. And also one has to become equipoised in sukha dukkha, in happiness and distress. In this way, Srila Prabhupada states that this is the situation of one who is eligible to return to that parampada, that supreme destination, the spiritual world, the kingdom of God. Then further, Prabhupada continues speaking about the spiritual world. Quote, elsewhere in the Gita, chapter 8, text 21, it is stated,
avyakto kshara ityuktas tam ahuh paramam gatim yam prapyamam nivart yam prapyana nivartante taddhama paramam mama.
Avyakta means unmanifested. Not even all of this material world is manifested before us. Our senses are so imperfect that we cannot even see all of the stars within this material universe. In Vedic literature, we can receive much information about all the planets, and we can believe it or we cannot believe it. All the important planets are described in Vedic literature, especially the Srimad Bhagavatam. And the spiritual world, which is beyond the material sky, is described as avyakta, unmanifested. One should desire and hanker after that supreme kingdom, for when one attains that kingdom, he does not have to return to this material world. Unquote. So, the word avyakta is used here, which means unmanifest. Unmanifest doesn't mean that it doesn't exist. It only means that it's not visible to our ordinary vision. It is existing, it is manifest, but for other beings, not for us. So Krishna is saying in this verse, avyaktaha, and then akshara. Akshara means that which is infallible. Iti uktaha. It is said that spiritual world is said to be unmanifest and infallible. Tam ahuhu paramam gatim. It is a supreme destination. There is nothing higher than that to attain. Having attained which, there is nothing more left to attain. That is the supreme destination. Today, if you ask people, they always have some destinations to go to. We want to go to a bigger city, a bigger place, a wealthier situation. People who have gone on the space shuttle now say, now we want to go to the moon. Those who want to go to the, have gone to the moon, they say, now we want to go to Mars. We want to go to this planet, that planet. They want to go further and further and further and further destinations. But that destination beyond which there is no other destination, that supreme destination, paramam gatim, is the Vaikuntha world. So that should be our aim. And Prabhupada is saying here, one should desire and hanker after that supreme kingdom. For when one attains that kingdom, he does not have to return to this material world. So the meaning of this is that one should not hanker to go to any place in this world. One should rather want to go to the spiritual destination that is beyond this world. That's the purport of this. And in this material world also, things are not manifest to the extent of the way that Krishna has created this world. There is much more to this universe than what we can see and what we can perceive with our senses and our instruments. So even man knows just a small fraction of this entire creation, very, very tiny fraction. So what then to speak of the spiritual world? The scientists are involved in a futile task, pointless. They will never, ever be able to understand this material world fully. Just to a small, very, very, very tiny degree, some understanding is there, that also imperfect. So rather than waste our time and energy in trying to understand so many things which are not necessary, we should focus our energy on that knowledge which will help us to go to the spiritual world. That is Prabhupada's advice to everyone. One should desire and hanker after that supreme kingdom. This is called Siddhi Lalasa. Devotees may also desire some kind of spiritual perfection. So we should hanker to be in that situation where we can serve purely. Of course, the desire to be there is driven by a desire to serve purely and in the best way. It's also a hankering for a stage of perfection. For example, Narottam Das Thakur may pray, Vishaya chhadiya kabe shuddha habe man, kabe hama herabo shri Vrindavan. So he's hankering to go to Vrindavan, the real Vrindavan. He understands that one cannot see the spiritual world when one's senses are not pure, when one's mind is not pure. So when will that day come when I will become pure enough to actually see Vrindavan and enter Vrindavan, the real Vrindavan, not just the geographical Vrindavan? Prabhupada used to say, you cannot enter Vrindavan with a railway or aeroplane ticket. We should not think that because we are within the geographical boundaries of what we think is Vrindavan, we are in Vrindavan. Not necessarily. It's a state of consciousness. So one must hanker not just to be physically in that spiritual world, but one must hanker to have that state of consciousness that will automatically enable us to be transferred to that perfect spiritual world. Because in that spiritual world, we will only serve without any motive, material motive. We only serve out of love. That is the supreme characteristic of the spiritual world. All the devotees are headed there. And they are headed there for a rousing welcome. You see that story many times, that picture. It's a very nice picture of Krishna with his cowherd boys, and he's embracing one cowherd boy. Have you seen that? They're coming from different directions, and then Krishna is embracing this one cowherd boy. Do you know what that picture is? Who knows? Gopakumar. What about Gopakumar? Yes? He returns to the spiritual world after a long journey. He had a multi-stop ticket. He went to so many destinations before. He went to Swargaloka, Janaloka, Maharloka, Tapaloka, Satyaloka, Shivaloka, Vaikuntha. Finally he entered into Goloka Vrindavan. And Krishna was waiting for him. Oh, you have come back. How long I have been waiting for you. Patiently. Do you know what was his name in Goloka? What was Gopakumar's name? Who remembers? Since many devotees knew that was the picture of Gopakumar. But what was Gopakumar's name by which Krishna called him when he returned to Goloka Vrindavan? Anyone knows? His name was Sarup. He said, my dear Sarup, you have come back. I have been waiting for you such a long time. So then devotees of the Lord are headed for that welcome. Krishna personally is waiting for everyone to come back home. There is a story regarding Ramanujacharya and his disciple. called Quraysh, he had many stalwart disciples, each great devotees of the Lord. One of them was called Quraysh. There are many stories about Quraysh. And it so happened, and this episode is at a time when Ramanujacharya was about 110 years old. And Quraysh, his disciple, was also very old. And when Quraysh went into the temple of the Lord asked him, "So Quraysh, you have come before me, so what do you want?" Some of these great stalwarts, the deities used to actually speak to them. So the deity said, "So my dear Quraysh, what do you want?" So immediately, spontaneously, Quraysh broke out into a song of praise of the Lord. The Lord became extremely pleased. He said, "Ask me for a benediction, Quraysh." So he said, I'm self completely satisfied. I have had your darshan, I have seen you, I don't need anything more. I'm completely satisfied." The Lord kept on persisting, "Quraysh, ask me, ask me, ask me." He asked, said so many times, "Ask me, ask me, ask me." Finally Quraysh said, "My Lord, if it pleases you, now I have become very, very old, and this body is becoming very difficult for me to bear. So please release me from this bodily situation and place me at your lotus feet." So Quraysh, so the Lord said, "Yes, it will be done. And not only for you, Quraysh, but everyone who is connected with you is destined for my supreme abode." And immediately word spread far and wide. Immediately word spread out. This is the Lord's promise to Quraysh. This is the benediction he has received. Ramanujacharya at that time was in his own residence. As soon as the word reached him, when a messenger brought this message to him, Ramanujacharya immediately took his upper cloth and threw it in the air and shouted with joy, "My life is successful, my life is successful." So the devotee was a little bewildered. He said, "My dear, what is it? Dear Ramanujacharya, what are you happy about?" He said that the Lord has promised Quraysh that he will go back to Godhead, and because of him, everybody connected to him will also go back to Godhead. So because I'm connected to him, so I am sure to go back to Godhead. I will go back to Godhead. That's the good news. So Ramanujacharya didn't need anybody else's assistance to go back to Godhead. He was the guru. He was a stalwart acharya, one who could deliver millions. But here Ramanujacharya was thinking that, "Just see, my disciple Quraysh is so fortunate and so exalted. And because I am connected to him, my return to the spiritual world is also assured." And then he rushed to meet Quraysh. Quraysh had begun his preparations for his final journey. And the word had spread and everybody was gathering for this glorious departure that had been predicted by the Lord himself in the temple. And then Ramanuja came and he sat before Quraysh. And then he said to Quraysh, "My dear Quraysh, how is it that you want to go back before me?" So then Quraysh said, "My dear Ramanujacharya, I want to preserve the order of precedence." So Ramanujacharya said, "Quraysh, don't speak in riddles. Tell me clearly what you have in mind." So he said, "It's like this. When souls from here go back to Vaikuntha, the already existing eternal associates of the Lord in the spiritual world, they welcome the newly arrived ones. But actually that is not the proper etiquette. The etiquette is that the junior should welcome the seniors. Not that the senior should wait and welcome the juniors. That's not proper. So, I want to go before you. So when I go back there, I will be there to welcome you when you come." So Ramanujacharya said, Quresh, you are too intelligent. And he said that actually in the spiritual world there is no such distinction of seniority and juniority as we see in this material world. Of course, there is a different conception, but what is senior or junior here may not apply there. But still, you want to maintain this relationship, that is your glory. You want to see yourself as a servant of the devotees even there. So that is very, very glorious. So Ramanujacharya began to glorify his disciple Quresh. So in this way, we are all headed back. All we have to do is to just follow this process. And some will go before, some will go later. Those who go before will be there to welcome those who come later. So, either way, it's a glorious journey. We are all destined for, we have to prepare ourselves for this journey. Even for an ordinary journey to some other country or something, we have to prepare so much. We have to get the visa, we have to buy certain things that we may need, some special clothing perhaps if it's very cold, and so many things we have to do. So also, for this one last journey, we have to make so much preparation. So our goal of life, our focus should be always on this one last journey. And as we hear in this shloka, Yam prapti na nivartante tad dham paramam mama. Once having gone there, it's a one-way ticket that Krishna gives us. There's no need to come back to this material world which is full of misery. So what qualification does one need? One has to think about the Lord. And that is what Krishna says here. Let us read this next paragraph on page 24. Next, one may raise the question of how one goes about approaching the abode of the Supreme Lord. Information of this is given in the 8th chapter. It is said there, Antakale chamameva smaran muktva kalevaram yaprayati samadbhavam yati nastyatra sanshayah. Anyone who quits his body at the end of life, remembering me, attains immediately to me, to my nature. And there is no doubt of this. Bhagavad Gita chapter 8, text 5. One who thinks of Krishna at the time of his death goes to Krishna. One must remember the form of Krishna. If he quits his body thinking of this form, he surely approaches the spiritual kingdom. Madbhavam refers to the supreme nature of the Supreme Being. The Supreme Being is Satchidananda Vigraha. That is, His form is eternal, full of knowledge and bliss. Our present body is not Satchidananda. It is Asat, not Sat. It is not eternal. It is perishable. It is not Chit, full of knowledge, but is full of ignorance. We have no knowledge of the spiritual kingdom, nor do we even have perfect knowledge of this material world, where there are so many things unknown to us. The body is also Nirananda. Instead of being full of bliss, it is full of misery. All of the miseries we experience in the material world arise from the body. But one who leaves the body thinking of Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, at once attains a Satchidananda body. Unquote. So this is the real formula. To think of Krishna at the time of death. We will attain whatever state of consciousness we have at the time of death. Yam yam vapi smaran bhavam tyajatyante kalevaram tam tam evaiti kaunteya sada tad bhava bhavitaha. So Krishna mentions, whatever is the state of consciousness that we have at the moment of death will determine the state of our next body. And Prabhupada also mentions in his purports that even before we die, our next destination and form of body is already decided. The subtle body, which contains our desires and so on, is already getting ready. The subtle body of the next life is already getting ready even before we have died. So we have to prepare for our next life. It's like a student who prepares for the final examination so that he or she can be promoted to the next class. In the same way, the death is the final examination, and we are all students, and we have to prepare for this examination of death so that we can be promoted to a better form of life in the next life. And the best form, the best next birth, is that we don't take a material body again at all. That's the best. That's when we pass out of the school altogether, free from student life. So we have to make that progress from the first standard to the 10th standard, and then we pass out. In the same way, we gradually evolve in our spiritual development till we attain the state that is being spoken about here. Antakale cha mameva smaran. Smaran means to remember. Muktva kalevaram. Kalevaram means the body, muktva means to give up. Antakala means the last moment, that is death. So at the time of quitting the body, we should remember Krishna. And if that happens, yaha prayati samad bhavam yati na asti sanshayaha. So there should be no doubt, O Arjuna. Please don't have any doubts about this. If anyone quits his body remembering me, he will surely come back to me, to my abode. There is no doubt about this. So Krishna is giving a categorical assurance here that it is not an ordinary thing thinking of Krishna at the time of death. And someone may say, well, then I can lead a life of merriment and enjoyment, and just at the time of death I will remember Krishna and go back to Godhead. I will commit all forms of sinful activities. I will enjoy life in this world. And just at the final moment of death, I'll think of Krishna's form. And Krishna has said, na sanshayaha, don't doubt, you will come back to me. So we will go back. Nice plan, isn't it? Yes? Yes, some devotee is saying yes. Maybe they haven't understood the question. No or yes? No. Why not? What is the flaw in this logic?
The karmas. The karmas, they count the life. They got the importance.
Yes, but the question is that why can I not do anything I like in life, and then just at the last moment I think of Krishna and then I go back to Godhead? Yes. Yes, very correct. We cannot think of Krishna at the time of death if we have not trained our mind to think of Krishna while we are living. Just as a student cannot remember all the formulae at the examination table unless he has at least read them once before or tried to memorize them seriously before. It's not that he has never heard of these formulas before and then he suddenly goes to the examination table and remembers everything. Is that possible? He has to study, he has to practice. Similarly, we cannot think of Krishna at the time of death unless we have practiced remembering him throughout our life. That's a very important point. Otherwise, it is not possible for us to remember. We cannot cheat Krishna. If we think that we can cheat Krishna, then Krishna will cheat us at the time of death. Then he will distract our mind by something else. So we will not be able to remember Krishna at the time of death. So that is one very important reason. What is the second? Let's try to find fault with this logic. That's one good reason. Another reason, yes. Yes, very sound logic. At the time of death, we will only remember that which we are most attached to. In times of trouble, we always remember things which are dear to us. What did Ajamil remember at the time of danger? His son. Because his son was very dear to him. But what was his great fortune? That the son's name was Narayan. But he remembered not the Lord, but he remembered his son, because his son was dear to him. So we will remember whatever is dear to us. It may be our money, it may be our pet, it may be anything. And we will get appropriate destination. Very good. That's reason number two. Reason number three. Yes. Absolutely. Very sublime logic. If somebody is thinking that I will commit sinful activities all my life and at the time of death then I will remember Krishna, the very simple answer to this is that we do not know when we are going to die. Isn't it? Everyone may not be as fortunate as Parikshit Maharaj or even as fortunate as Maharaj Khatvanga. Maharaj Parikshit was given 7 days notice that he would die in a certain period, so he could prepare for it nicely. Maharaj Khatvang was not given so much time, he was only given one moment. But because he had practiced earlier, so even that one moment he could utilize well to remember Krishna, and he went back to Godhead. It's like a teacher giving a fixed exam, saying that the test will be on such and such topic at such and such time, on this day. So all the students come well prepared, because they already know in advance. But what about a surprise test? One fine day the students come and the teacher says, now there is a surprise test. So what happens? So only those who have been regularly studying will pass. Those who have been waiting, then let the exam come and last minute I will study and then I'll pass, they will not be able to pass this exam at least. So very good. This is reason number three. Because we do not know when death will come. Reason number four. Anybody? Yes.
Time of death, they say that when soul leaves the body, intense suffering like 40,000 scorpions biting at a time.
Yes, very correct. The time of death is a very trying situation. It is said in the Puranas that there are the pain for an ordinary soul that leaves the body is the pain that we can experience when thousands of scorpions bite us. How irritated we get when even one mosquito bites us or one ant bites us. What to speak of thousands of scorpions biting at the same time. So when the mind, when there is so much pain, the mind will obviously get distracted by this pain and be unable to focus on remembering Krishna. Imagine the times when you have been very sick, when there has been a lot of pain in the body. How have you been able to chant your rounds? Suppose there is intense pain in the stomach. Are you able to chant nicely Hare Krishna mantra on your japa? So what to speak of the pain at the time of death? So therefore, King Kulushekhar has prayed, Krishna tvadiya pada pankaja panjarantam adyaiva vishaya manasa rajahansaha प्राण प्रयाण समये कफवात पित्तैः कंठावरोधनस विधौ स्मरणम कुतस्ते. This is my dear Lord, now I am hale and hearty. So let my mind, which is like a swan, find shelter at the lotus that is your feet. And let this happen immediately, because at the time of death, the bile, mucus and air will all gather in the throat, and it will become very uncomfortable. How can I remember you in such a situation? Smaranam kutaste. How can I remember? It is not possible. So very right. The pain of death for an ordinary soul can be very distracting. So that's good. Reason number 4. Any other reason? Reason number 5? Yes. Yes, we can sometimes die even when we are unconscious. Or you can die in your sleep. Then what happens to all our plans that I will remember Krishna when I die? But then my question is that suppose you have practiced remembering Krishna all your life, but you will also sleep. And when you are sleeping. Unless you are dreaming of Krishna at one time. But if you are not dreaming of Krishna, and if somebody dies in his sleep, then what happens? Will you go back to Godhead? Yes? Why do you say that? Yes?
Krishna will take care, because he knows that devotee is remembering throughout his life. So Krishna will make sure that just like, for example, employee, even if he doesn't work on all days, but he is paid for that. So maybe Krishna knows that he has working for the life.
Yes, for a devotee who has always struggled hard to remember Krishna and serve Krishna throughout his or her life, if that devotee passes away from this world in sleep, Krishna will protect. Although it is Krishna's promise here that when one remembers his form at the time of death, one will go back to Godhead. But in case one passes away in sleep, or all of a sudden in an accident or something like that, then Krishna takes care of his devotee. Basically, a devotee doesn't have to worry about anything, because a devotee has taken shelter of Krishna, and a devotee is fully confident of Krishna's protection. Avashya rakshibe Krishna. That is the formula. So for a devotee, it doesn't matter whether one passes away in sleep or when we are awake, whether in Vrindavan, outside Vrindavan. Krishna has his own plan for us, and whatever he wishes will happen for us. We should only try to become his faithful and loving servants, and we leave the rest to Krishna. So in this way we can understand that remembering Krishna at the time of death is not something cheap, something easily done. It has to be practiced all one's life. One has to work hard, very sincerely. Then only will one be able to remember Krishna at the time of death. The other day somebody asked the question about some famous political leader having chanted the name of Ram at the time of death. What happened? But Krishna is saying here, Smaranam Muktva Kalevaram, saying one must remember. And Prabhupada is saying one must remember the form of the Lord. So even if someone is chanting the name of the Lord but doesn't have the clear conception of the Lord when he is chanting his name, then he will not go back to Godhead. At best he may be relieved, like Ajamil was, from the effects of sinful activity because he chanted the name of Lord Ram. But for going back to Krishna Loka, to Vaikuntha, we have to chant the pure name of the Lord. Chanting the pure name of the Lord means doing it with full consciousness of love. Prabhupada makes an additional point here, contrasting the body and the soul. He says, just as the soul is Satchit Ananda, the body is exactly the opposite. Asat, Achit, Nirananda. Opposite qualities. So the body is a very artificial condition for the soul. So the body is in a contrasting situation. So now it is time for us to come out of this artificial situation and return to our natural atmosphere in the spiritual world. So we have to very consciously, very seriously cultivate Krishna consciousness. It's a very important term. These are the two most important words in our movement, in our philosophy, in our life. What is that? Krishna consciousness. You have to have both. If it's only Krishna, but there's no consciousness of Krishna like it was for Duryodhan, then it doesn't help. If there's only consciousness, but not about Krishna, about Maya, then it doesn't help. So we have to have consciousness about Krishna. That is the ultimate goal of our life. And then at the proper time, Krishna will take us back to Godhead. So we don't have to worry. All we should hanker for is that state of consciousness which will please Krishna, which will encourage Krishna or attract Krishna to come and reside in our heart and take us back to Godhead at the time that He thinks fit. So we'll stop here. Are there any questions or comments? Yes. So the question is the consciousness connected to the soul or to the mind? Who would like to answer this question? Is the consciousness connected to the soul or to the mind? Yes. Yes. So consciousness is a symptom of the soul. When the soul exists, consciousness exists. If there is consciousness, it means there is soul. So without the soul, the consciousness leaves the body. The subtle body, which consists of the mind and the false ego, act as a vehicle to carry the soul from one gross body to another gross body. So the soul produces, or rather has consciousness as its symptom. At the same time, even though the mind is matter, the consciousness is reflected through this matter. Right? We had given examples earlier of different bulbs of the same luminosity or intensity which are covered with different kinds of colored papers. Right? Or give another example. Sunshine. Sunshine passing through a colored glass. Let's say you go out into the sun and keep a colored glass sheet, and then you study the sunshine, the light that comes below that. So you study the light below and ask the question, is this light connected to the sun or to the glass? What would you say? Yes, what would be your answer? Both. The light as you see it is not the pure sunlight. It's the light of the sun that is reflected through the instrument of that glass. So the light originates from the sun. There is no doubt about that. The glass is not the origin of the sun, of the sunlight. The glass cannot produce sunlight. The glass is, however, obstructing the sunlight. It is reflecting the sunlight in a certain way, maybe only permitting certain light to go in, stopping, reflecting back certain light and so on. And if it's a colored glass, only certain colored light you can see. In the same way, the state of mind or our consciousness reflects the original pure consciousness of the soul in different ways. So depending on how pure or impure the mind is, depending on the quality of the mind, the original pure consciousness of the soul is transformed into a different kind of consciousness, so to speak. Just as the sunlight transformed into different kinds of light by keeping different kinds of color glass sheets. Yes?
But for example, if someone is staying in the dam, if he leaves the body without thinking Krishna, then what is his destiny?
The question is that if someone stays in the holy dham and leaves the body without thinking of Krishna, then what is the destination? Who would like to answer? Go back into the 84 lakh species. Okay, one answer. Yes? According to his devotion, Krishna will give him a destination. Okay? So Mataji is saying that unless one remembers the form of Krishna at the time of death, simply dying in Vrindavan will not take us back to Godhead. Any other views? Yes. Yes, that is actually the right answer. Srila Prabhupada has explained the answer to this question on several occasions. Vrindavan is a special place. It is a place from where one can exit into the spiritual world, although that is possible from anywhere if one is remembering Krishna. However, if one lives a life of forgetfulness of Krishna, or if one commits offenses against the dham by performing sinful activities in the dham and so on, in other words, if the quality of one's life is like that of an animal, let us say, then one will not go back to Goloka Vrindavan immediately. At the same time, one is not devoid of the effects of staying in the dham. So one gets another birth in a lower species of life. Prabhupada specifically mentioned monkeys, dogs, hogs, and sometimes turtles. One occupies one of these bodies, one suffers greatly to make up for all the offenses one has committed in the previous life as a human being. But nevertheless, because now in this animal body we are constantly in contact with the dust of Vrindavan, breathing the air of Vrindavan, drinking the water of Vrindavan, therefore one goes back to Godhead at the end of that life. That is assured. However, it is better to prepare a life where one is remembering Krishna with love and devotion, rather than think that one can come to Vrindavan, live any life we like, and then have one form, one lifetime as a dog or a hog, and then anyway we are going back to Goloka Vrindavan. That consciousness or that mood is not nice. And then Krishna may exercise his own discretion what to do. But better that we follow the standard process of cultivating Krishna consciousness in all seriousness so that we can remember him with devotion at the time of death. Okay, so thank you very much. We will stop here. We'll meet tomorrow again. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaur Premanande.